Hello and welcome again to another episode of the Echo ECCO Chamber with me, your host, Farbod, and my co-host, Jamie. How you doing, Jamie?
Hello again.
Now, Jamie, what are we going to do today then?
Well, today we thought we'd chat about our top 10 best baddies in games.
Top 10 best baddies. And it was interesting, wasn't it? Because we've shared each other's top 10 lists, and we are going to talk through all 20 of our choices, but there's no overlap.
No, not even one.
Not even one, which was really interesting, because, you know, you've got baddies from games that I've never played, and you're saying that I've got baddies from games that you've not played either.
Yeah.
So should we just crack on straight into at number 10 for you, Jamie?
So, at number 10 for me, I have talked about before, in our very first podcast, it's from Conker's Bad Fur Day, and it's The Great Mighty Pooh.
The Great Mighty Pooh.
Yeah. With his fabulous opera singing and throwing bits of himself at you.
Yeah.
I played it repeatedly, possibly just because of the song, but I think he's definitely up there with one of my favourite villains.
I mean, he is a great villain, and I was not aware of him until we did the first podcast talking about Conker's Bad Fur Day. And I think for myself and probably many of the listeners, it was a highlight listening to that interesting song of his.
I didn't know there were quite so many words for poo. I learned them all from that.
Scat is a great word used in that song, especially when it's rhymed with twat as well. I thought it was a mark of genius.
I loved it.
Well, so interestingly, to echo that, my number 10 is Dutch Vanderlind from the game that I reviewed from the first podcast. And Dutch is an interesting character. He was from Red Dead Redemption 2. Again, a game as complex as that, it's not like he is he's not like a big boss or a big baddie, really. He's a much more complex character than just being a baddie. But to be fair, he is the leader of a outlaw gang, and, you know, his morals are somewhat louche, and he does kill his own paramour, you know, sorry, spoilers. Which is pretty bad, I would say. If your partner is with you for many years, and then you just gun her down in cold blood, that makes you quite an evil dude, in my opinion. So that's why he gets there, but not very high on the list. He's my number 10.
I know, he's an excellent choice. He's a complex one. I like him.
Yeah. Not all out evil, but pretty bad dude still.
Yeah. My number 9 is in a similar vein to my Great Mighty Pooh. So one of the other games I mentioned was Banjo-Kazooie, and the villain in that was called Grundy. It was called Grundhilda. And she was a witch, a big fat witch, and her whole aim, she was just the classic baddie, and her whole aim was to steal Banjo's sister to become beautiful. That was just the whole premise of the whole game, and she was ridiculous, and you had to beat her at the end with a quiz. So she was utterly bizarre, and it was very, very video game, and it was ridiculous, and I really liked it. And at the same
Grundhilda.
Time,
yeah, she is the classic fairy tale witch, isn't she? Big nose with a wart on the end, big chin, green skin.
Yeah.
Looks like a cauldron as well in her shape.
She does.
It's a good, colourful, evil character there. I like it. So my number 9, again, following on, is a very strange order we've picked, is Captain LeChuck from the Monkey Island series.
Yeah.
I mean, what a great character. Basically, throughout the whole Monkey Island series, you have this ghost pirate LeChuck constantly making plans to try and I've forgotten his name now. What's the name of the main character in Monkey Island?
Gonna have to Google it now. I've lost it.
I'm doing it now. Don't worry. We'll edit this out. Monkey Island. Guybrush. Guybrush Threepwood. Of course it's Guybrush Threepwood. How could I forget? So yeah, the main character Guybrush Threepwood is constantly beset by troubles with Captain LeChuck. You know, and it goes on for, I can't remember, there's like five or six games, and it's constantly involving LeChuck and his just comically evil, skull-headed, flame-beard visage is running through the whole series.
He couldn't get more villainous, really. He just, they ticks all the boxes, both of them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, these classic villains. Yeah, you can't do them any better. But again, they're not, for me, LeChuck doesn't get up there too high because he's so comedy.
Mm.
You know, there's a lot of it which is very slapstick and funny, and yeah, as good as he is as a baddie, he's not evil enough. He doesn't linger with me. He doesn't, you know, the fear it induces is not there. Yeah. So
my number eight is, so this is the reason this guy is a villain here is because it was such a good fight in the game. The game itself was not great, but it was Arkham Origins. I don't know if you've ever played it. And it was Deathstroke in Arkham Origins. And it was possibly the best bit in the whole game, was you had to go toe-to-toe with this character who is the best fighter in the whole DC universe, and you have to fight him as Batman. And every input you do, if you don't do it right, he hits you and, you know, potentially kills you. And the whole thing is so cinematic. And it's just, I mean, I'm a massive DC fan and a big comic book nerd, but going toe-to-toe with Deathstroke, it felt like you were doing it. It was really exciting, and he was really difficult to beat. And if anyone's ever played it, you know, it's such a good fight. The whole scene is just brilliant. You can even watch it, you know, you can watch it on YouTube, and it's like watching a movie.
Wow. You see, one of my biggest omissions in my gaming at the moment is the Arkham games. The series, that Batman series game, because Batman is my favorite superhero character.
Mm.
And yet I had never got into the Arkham games. And this is despite friends of mine who know the kinds of games I like saying, mate, you really need to get on this. These are excellent games. And I think that actually there is one of them is available on the PlayStation 5 now. The PlayStation 4 version is available as part of the package of digital games that you can play once you buy a PlayStation 5. So I am going to have to get onto this. I think it may even be Arkham Origins is the one that's available. I'll have to double check that. But yeah, because everyone keeps going on about the technical way they've created the fighting mechanics, and it's meant to be excellent. And you know, with your recommendation again, I think I am going to have to start playing these games. It sounds really interesting. I love that. I love, you know me, how I like games that are like movies.
Oh, the whole thing, like, if you're going to play it from the first one. I'll do this another time. I'd like to talk about it, because the whole thing is fantastic. Like, from the first game, Arkham Asylum, all the way to Arkham Knight. It's just, you just have to play it. You just have to.
I will. I know exactly who I'm going to get on as a guest for that, because I'm pretty sure they've played it and they're a huge proponent of that series of games. So
yeah.
That's for a future episode.
So who's your number eight?
My number eight is Sarah Kerrigan. I don't know. Do you know who that is?
No, tell me.
No. So Sarah Kerrigan is one of those ones that you have to have played the game and be involved in. There are stands of this game going, how can you not know who Sarah Kerrigan is? Sarah Kerrigan is a protagonist in the game StarCraft. So she is a Terran, a human person, who is one of the military units that you play in the StarCraft story arc in the first game. And she gets abducted, where you believe she gets killed by the Zerg, who are the insectoid monstrous aliens in that game. Mm. And then at the very end of the first StarCraft game, she arises again when you think you've destroyed the Zerg and their like collective hive mind. Sarah Kerrigan suddenly arises, and she is now the queen of the Zerg hive, and she is this monstrous kind of Spiderella character, like Medusa character almost. And what makes her particularly evil is because she's, as a unit herself, she's incredibly strong, but it's that she fully remembers everything that happened to her. So it's not like she's been brainwashed and forgotten. She completely remembers everything that happened to her and the relationships and everything she has as a Terran, a human. And then when she turns, because the Zerg take her, she kind of amalgamates and she takes that mindless, almost hive, you know, insect, monstrous alien vibe, and gives it a cold, calculating, human, strategic brain behind it, completely callous and completely overwhelmed with her own power and importance. So she's a really, really good villain, like, you know. And she, again, she's not well known enough, but in amongst the StarCraft fans out there, she's a very well known character, and everyone would really like her.
Her picture, and she looks like a phenomenal villain.
Just
amazing.
Brilliant voice in the original games as well, because StarCraft's a really old game now, but still really high quality baddie.
Excellent.
So we move on to number seven for you, Jamie. Who's your number seven?
So my number seven, this one popped into my head. So when I first ever played video games and I was playing on the old computer, there was a game called Ski Free. And I don't know if you've ever played it, but you may have seen it. And it's like just a pixelated thing. You're just basically skiing down a cliff and you just have to avoid some things. But when you reach a certain point, this Yeti rocks up and chases you. And no matter what you do, he will catch you and he will eat you. And that's it. Game over.
Do you know what? I think, funnily, I'm now looking at the pictures of Ski Free, and I think I have actually played this game.
I thought you might.
And now I'm seeing the Yeti. I think now I'm seeing it. I think I'm genuinely like having memories of the frustration of this game.
Well, you know, it used to terrify me because I was like, oh my god, ski, go faster. No!
Yeah, but you can't.
Every time, nothing I could do.
Such a great baddie, because that is actually a really good baddie. And in fact, in my mind, for the sheer terror of seeing a baddie coming on screen, there is nothing better than the ones that you cannot defeat.
Yeah.
You can't win against them. There's something like, you know, you play this game, you spend so many hours into it, and the game suddenly decides, nope, that's as far as you're going to go, mate.
And he's just so scary. He's got such a horrible, like, with only a couple of pixels.
Yeah.
It's horrible. It's got horrible yellow teeth.
God, single red dots for eyes.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah. One.
Right. My number seven is a very famous character from literature, but I'm talking about the main protagonist of the Castlevania series.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Dracula. You know, the Lord of Darkness, the preeminent vampire. I mean, do we need to really say more about Dracula? I mean, everyone knows about Bram Stoker's Dracula for that, but the Castlevania Dracula was, you know, pretty terrifying when he became angry. I mean, he's really slick looking, almost like a Guy Fawkes kind of moustache and beard, you know, like flowing long hair, a bit like Lestrade from Interview with the Vampire.
Yeah.
That kind of vibe, just like
impossibly
handsome, incredibly pale, just utterly assured in himself. And then when he got cross, his eyes would go red and he would bleed, you know, his tears would be blood. I mean, it was just a perfect tableau of evil. And I won't go too much into the Castlevania series because it's been years since I've played it, but I just remember being kind of enamored with the baddie involved at the end. And that's, for me, that was kind of an interesting dynamic that occurred in a game that, you know, where your baddie you're meant to try and defeat, of course you are, but there's this quite charming and quite, you know, pained character who has kind of romantic background, and it's all, you know, it's all that kind of gothic appeal that that once upon a time I really enjoyed.
Well, he's another really deep character. I don't know if you've seen the Castlevania series on Netflix, but he's very good on that.
No, I've not watched the cartoon series. I hear it's very good.
You should watch that as well. It does. You feel for him. You do. You hate him, but you feel for him.
Yeah, yeah. He's a troubled character. But you know, how much can you excuse the evil that he also does? So
yeah, exactly.
There we are. So we're at number six now, nearly halfway through.
Yeah, so my number six is from GTA San Andreas, and it's Frank Tenpenny, the police officer. And I don't know if you remember him, but he was voiced by, I think it was voiced by Samuel L. Jackson off the top of my head.
Yes, he was.
And he was corrupt, he was horrible. He was supposed to be, you know, a police officer, he's supposed to be doing good, and he, yeah, in the end tries to kill you, and he's an absolute, well, he's a turd.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and he is a proper turd. Yeah, there's nothing like the, you know, the Grand Theft Auto games for giving you characters like this, such like morally ambiguous characters, and it was nice because, you know, you play in the Grand Theft Auto series, obviously you're playing almost exclusively, if I'm right, as one of the bad guys, societally understood to be a bad guy, you know, criminals and crooks, and it's why they were so controversial. But what was great about it as well is they didn't shy away from things like corruption. And no. San Andreas is all about, really, it's all about the LAPD and the relationship the LAPD had with gangs in poor black communities, Hispanic communities, and the way they behaved. And you know, you don't have to dig very deep on the internet to hear the stories about LAPD. And Frank Tenpenny really epitomized all of that.
And the fact that he was the face of, like, you hated him. You hated everything when he was around. You just wish you could just shoot him.
Yeah, it made you nervous.
He couldn't make you proper nervous.
Yeah, shield that he wore like made you realize that, you know, if you take a pop at him, he gave that idea, this kind of omnipotence that he almost had over the people that he beat up and murdered and exploited. And and the fact that it's voiced by Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah, I mean, he just does it. Fantastic.
It's near perfect. It's near perfect.
Really is.
So my number six is the Templars. Knight Templar. And anyone who's played any of the Assassin's Creed games, and we are I'm already planning probably like a mini series of podcasts all about the Assassin's Creed games. Because really, I mean, I could talk for a full hour at least on just the first ever Assassin's Creed. And I know for a fact that there's a group of people who want to spend maybe a series of podcasts talking just about Black Flag.
Yeah.
Because in my opinion, Black Flag is
one of the top ones. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a fantastic game. But all the way through the series of games, it is this kind of battle between, on one side, the assassins, and the other side, this fictionalized idea of the Templars, or the Knights Templar. It's a really interesting thing because each side in the Assassin's Creed story believe that they're doing what's right. The assassins, however, erring on the side of things like anarchy and allowing people to be free by getting rid of oppression. And then the Templars saying, no, people want peace. And the way they want peace is by having security. And we will make those decisions about who or what, you know, how society works by manipulating society that way. But it's funny because they both believe wholeheartedly that what they are doing is for the greater good of mankind.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the Templars' attitude is, well, you know, if I become stinking rich and powerful, that's only because I am ruthless enough to be able to do it to make sure everyone else has peace. So I'm going to put myself into that power. And the assassins are like, hang on, mate. You're not going to do that because I'm going to stick a blade in your neck. And it's they're a good addition to anyone's baddie list, I think, because they span generations in this series. And it's, you know, if your baddie, your enemy, you know, has been going on for hundreds of years, they have to be pretty good baddies. That's what I would say.
I like the fact that also not only are they everywhere and could be everyone, you can't necessarily kill them because they're an idea as well. It's just
that's exactly it.
A really difficult villain to defeat. You just never can. You can only defeat the big one, but they live on.
Yes, that's exactly it. So we're getting into top five now.
Yeah. So my number five, I mean, this one could be higher. And if you've ever played any of the Legend of Zelda games, this character is called, he's called Ganon. And, well, to be honest, I wasn't sure to put Ganon or another person called Ganondorf, because Ganondorf was in the Ocarina of Time, and I think he worked in the palace, and then he ends up stealing the princess and then effectively breaking the world and then becoming one with this demon called Ganon. And he's a very well designed one, because he was really scary. Even in the game, in the Ocarina of Time, you start off as a kid version of Link, and Ganondorf looks at you, and I remember thinking then, oh shit. I probably didn't swear because I was only young, but it was frightening. He was very frightening. And then eventually, when he becomes this thing called Ganon, it's like this giant horned pig monster. And he goes about destroying the world in all sorts of different ways, in all sorts of different games, in all sorts of different versions of Hyrule.
Yeah.
And every time it's Ganon, well, almost every time it's Ganon, but particularly Ganondorf, that form of him, he was the scariest. And he still has a lasting impression, left a lasting impression on me.
Yeah. He's got a bit of the Green Goblin about him, hasn't he, Ganondorf?
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he's big, much bigger than you. He's much stronger than you.
Yeah.
He's got red hair, big nose. He's well designed for considering it was, you know, back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was terrifying. Really terrifying.
Yeah, but you're right to say that when he transforms into Ganon, he is, you know, 10 times, 20 times more evil looking, with these giant horns and glowing green eyes and the double swords. He looks like a frightening character.
Yeah, he's not easy to beat. And in fact, like many of the Zelda games, it's not easy to beat him. It's not easy to come against him. He's just a shadowy figure all the way up until the end. You occasionally see him, he beats you a couple of times, and then eventually you maybe beat him. So yeah, he's an excellent villain.
Excellent villain.
Yeah.
So for my next, for my number five, reaching the top five, is actually a bit of a boy band here. I've got four characters, all in the same game. Three of them are kind of directly connected to each other, and one of them stands alone in the game. And the characters are Harlan Fontaine, Dr. Harlan Fontaine, Mickey Cohen, and Leland Monroe. And the fourth character is Garrett Mason. Do these names mean anything to you?
They ring a bell. Are they gangsters?
Mickey Cohen is an actual real life gangster that operated in the 1940s in Los Angeles. But in the game that I'm talking about, it's L.A. Noire.
Oh, yes, sorry.
Yes, Dr. Harlan Fontaine, yeah. And Leyland Monroe. And the reason I put them in is because I love that game. And again, we are talking about podcasts we'll be doing in the future. I will be doing a podcast on L.A. Noire in the future, just that game, because there's so much to talk about. Everything from the development of it, the unique kind of mechanics of the game, as well as the fact that it essentially bankrupted the studio that made it, because they put so much effort into the detail of that game. Yeah. But going back to the baddies in it, a game as good as that requires antagonists that are complex and well scripted and performed. So Harlan Fontaine is a kind of like a Dr. Feelgood character. He's a doctor to the stars, administers a lot of morphine and various other drug concoctions to rich people in their own homes, and is involved in a quite seedy, as part of the story of the game, a purchase of morphine that came from surplus in the Second World War.
Oh, I remember this, yeah.
And he's involved in distributing it and essentially becomes a bit of a drug peddler. Mickey Cohen is a classic organized crime leader, an actual real life character who they fictionalized for the game, but obviously involved in all sorts of seedy stuff. Leyland Monroe is the classic entrepreneurial, cutting corners capitalist, and might basically building all these terrible houses for veterans, taking money from Uncle Sam. Yeah. Building it, and I won't give it all away, but there's a whole load of government intrigue as well and corruption that he's involved in. Just really, really nasty but believable characters, like characters that could actually exist and have existed in real life, which makes them so dreadful. And then there's one character, who Garrett Mason, who in the story arc of the game you come across a couple of times. And one of the parts of the game is you are investigating a series of murders for whom you find suspects and you find, you get convictions for. But it turns out that all of these gruesome murders, all of women, all after dark sometime, all displayed really quite grotesquely with their bits and pieces thrown away and strategically used items from the murder scene to implicate other people. And essentially it's a serial killer, Garrett Mason, and the time which L.A. Noire is set, it's set just after the discovery of the Black Dahlia murder, which again is a real life murder and is as yet, as far as I understand, is still unsolved. And Garrett Mason is the psychopath that you essentially capture as part of your investigation. But what makes him a really terrible character is, even though you get him, and of course this is 1940s Los Angeles Police Department, so by getting him, you shoot him to death.
Yeah.
The thing that really, really sticks in your craw in that game is you've done all this investigation. You've essentially got the guy who's done all of these terrible murders. And then your chief of police comes in and says, I don't want to see any paperwork on this. The guy's connected to a whole bunch of higher ups in politics. And you go, but what about the guys that we've convicted? And he goes, don't worry about them. There'll be a mistrial here. A piece of evidence will go missing there. Don't worry about it. And what I really liked about it is, even though you get the guy, there's this really horrible kind of seedy understanding about the realpolitik of policing. You know, and this is just one aspect of this game. This is just one part. Incredible game. So those are my nominations for number five.
That's fabulous. So my number four, so I touched on Arkham, the Arkham series before, but my number four is the Joker from the Arkham series.
And quality.
Because he is so good. He is voiced fabulously by Mark Hamill.
Hamill himself.
The original voice of the Joker. And he is just terrifying. He has taken over Arkham Asylum. He's released his gas all over the city. I'm not going to spoil it, but like there are scenes where at one point you are the Joker and things like this, and he is just, and wherever, and another point, I think it's the third one in Arkham Knight, you start seeing him everywhere, and it's not a huge part of the game. Just look around and you'll see this, you'll see the Joker just dancing on the side, and then you look away, look back, and he's gone. Or you'll look up at a statue, which is normally of some woman's face, and it'll be the Joker's face. And he's everywhere. He is ingrained in you. He is the ultimate, he's the Joker to the Batman. He's the opposite. He's the yin to his yang, or whichever way around it is. And he is just, you know, everything about him is so well done. He's not that big. He's not that muscly, but he is manipulative and monstrous and he is, you know, in the end, he ends up being just such a part of Batman that he just can't necessarily, he can't get him out of his head, even though he's gone or been arrested or whatever the reason is. I'm not going to spoil it.
Yeah. He is, I mean, aside from the video game series, the Joker is a great character.
Yeah.
Just in that, you know, he has to be up there in anyone's baddie list, really, of all time, not just video games, but just of all time. Just a remorseless, inexplicable. No one ever figures out why he does what he does. There are loads of stories, you know, like in the first Batman movies, I remember, you know, they had this idea of who he is. But I really liked the kind of reboot Chris Nolan. This guy has just come out of nowhere, almost as if he's manifested this creature of pure chaos. And the pictures of him in the actual game are terrifying as well. This is the Joker that's been stuck in Arkham.
And he gets, again, I don't really want to spoil it, but he gets sick. And as he gets sick, he starts, like some of the pictures you may see, bits of him are falling off.
Yeah.
It just gets more grotesque and he just finds it funnier and funnier.
Yeah. And of course he does. And it's, you know, he's a clown. And clowns are incredibly scary anyway, and he is the epitome of the scary clown. You know, some people would say it, but I would say no, the Joker's worse.
Joker is the worst, especially when done properly, and like, the grin in the game, everything about him is just grotesque.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, well, my number four is... M. Bison.
Oh, yeah.
M. Bison, the main bad guy from the Street Fighter series. I mean, what can you say about him? The guy is supremely powerful. He has incredible martial arts skills. He's also a psychic. He also wants to rule the world as a dictator. You know, he stomps even the heroes is. He stomps them under his giant boots. He's completely remorseless, utterly ruthless. You know, what can you say, man? There's not enough superlatives to describe this character as a bad guy. He is a bad, bad man. But but he's also a playable character in the series, which I always really liked about him as well.
And he's quite difficult. I always tried to be him, and I was never that good at him. But whenever I played against him, I get my ass kicked every time.
I always appreciated and respected people that were good with M. Bison, because you're right, he was a difficult character, but he had some really powerful moves, and could easily, if played correctly, was like the boss of all bosses in that game.
Yeah. Brilliant.
There we are. So we're getting into the top three now.
Yeah. So my number three. Oh, God.
I don't know about you, but I've wrestled with the order for my number, for my 3, 2, and 1. How have you found it? I find it's quite difficult to get that last, those last three in the right order.
Yeah, I went, they did switch around, and to be honest, I could probably switch him round again. In fact, I may even do it right now. it's just, the three of them are all people that have just terrified me and frustrated me and beaten me and made for a good villain. And I couldn't really choose which to be top any of them. In fact, I am going to change it now. So I'm going to go. My number three is Shang Tsung from Mortal Kombat. Now, Shang Tsung is he's a magician, a human magician on Earthrealm. And he has... He was at one point, he was the main protagonist, but usually it ends up being a character called Shao Kahn. But the reason I put him in the list in particular is because in the latest game, in Mortal Kombat 11, there was a DLC that came out where Shang Tsung comes back and offers to help because there's a new big baddie called Kronika, and she controls time and she wants things to change because she's sick of it. And he offers to help the goodies getting rid of her. And then as you go through the game, he does brutal things. He burns people he doesn't need to burn. He pulls people in half he doesn't need to. And like, what are you doing? No, I'm just doing this because we need to stop the baddie. And then at the end, he kills the baddie, Kronika. And then you have a choice. Either he can win or the goodies can win. And if you let him win, he just, as you can imagine, he's now controller of all time in the game. And he played it fantastically, like, you know, a proper game of chess. And he's very clever. And he's got a fabulous voice. And he's got the power to change into everyone else and use their moves. So you don't even know who he is. And he's got this fabulous island as well, where you find all this stuff. And he's just a fabulous villain, and he's got great powers, and he ends up effectively winning.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah.
Again, when your baddie essentially wins, or literally up until the last minute you feel like it's over, they've won, that's a good baddie. And what you're describing is a really well-designed, well-thought-out baddie as well. Again, complex, but, you know, manipulative, conniving, clever. And yeah, again, looking at the pictures, he just looks like a I don't know, like an aged Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah, he doesn't have a trustworthy face at all.
No. And yet, you know, he's fighting on the side of the good guys. We're like, well,
yeah.
And sometimes you want someone like that on your side, don't you?
But
he's never fully. He's a great character. Great character. Yeah.
Who's your number three?
My number three is Pyramid Head.
Nice.
Do you know who I mean by Pyramid Head?
I know who Pyramid Head is. Yeah, from Resident Evil.
From Silent Hill.
Silent Hill.
Now, at some point, we're going to have to do a horror podcast, a horror game podcast. And no horror game podcast is complete without a mention of Resident Evil, for one, that you said, but Silent Hill, a Silent Hill series. I played the very first Silent Hill on the PlayStation 1. And it is a terrifying, terrifying game. And I can't remember now. Is Pyramid Head comes out in Silent Hill 1. If anyone doesn't know who Pyramid Head is, I mean, how would you describe him? He's a man-type figure, and he is wearing an apron, and he's got what looks like a metal cone on his head.
Yeah.
A sharp metal cone. And you essentially don't see him, any part of him, from about the nipples upwards. You never see what's there. And he's got this really, like, dark, dirty, blood-stained body. But the scariest bit is that he's utterly silent, and he just walks slowly, dragging this enormous, what looks like a cleaver or some sort of like single piece metal sword behind him, which is also covered in blood. And I still think about this character. It still haunts my dreams, which I think is probably the biggest testament as to why he's in my top three baddies of all time. Because in the Silent Hill series as well, if people haven't played it, it's not the same. The kind of the game dynamics and mechanics isn't quite the same. It is like living a nightmare rather than playing like a straightforward linear game where, you know, you'll get a gun and shoot it, and so long as you do it in a certain way, you'll win. Silent Hill doesn't work like that. It's almost like the game is walking you through this nightmare. And he is used often, Pyramid Head is often used as the creature that drives you deeper, further into the nightmarish scenario that you're in. And I hate that. I hated that. I hated that aspect of it. But I hated it so much that he made it into my top three. What do you think about it? Have you played Silent Hill games?
Well, I haven't played Silent Hill, but I know him. And he is just like, he's like a video game bogeyman, isn't he? He just, he's the thing that comes out from the night that you're frightened of in the darkness. Yeah. And it you just want to run away. You don't want to...
Yeah.
I can't remember if I think isn't he invincible as well? You can't do anything.
Yeah, you can't kill him. This is the thing. He's invincible, but he's also inexplicable. Like, what is he? What is he? Like, what is he doing? I mean, he's a man, but I suppose part of the thing is a lot of frightening things is what is under that cone.
Yeah.
I both want to know and also do not want to know what's happening under there. It's just a frightening character.
Yeah.
I just think I'm not into horror as a genre generally.
No.
But I played Silent Hill and the first one, and then I was hooked and I had to play Silent Hill 2 then. And I've been intermittently involving myself in that genre of game since, purely because of the effect that the original Silent Hill and the original Pyramid Head did to me.
Yeah, terrifying. He is. Mm. Yeah, that. Yeah, terrifying.
Just terrifying. Yeah, let's move on.
Yeah,
I don't look at him anymore.
I'm a little freaked out. I keep looking at his picture and he freaks me out.
Yeah.
So my next one is he's not classically scary. It's from the Smash Brothers series, and it's the Master Hand. And the Master Hand, from what you can gather, because there's no really explanation to any of it, it seems like in the very first Smash Brothers, it seems like Master Hand puts these toys or the different characters and then starts them fighting for fun. And then in the end, you end up fighting the hand itself. And Master Hand is... and he's the end villain at the end of everyone's story in it. And he, or she, the hand, is just incredibly difficult to kill with all sorts of different moves. And if you don't learn them quickly, you get punished. So, for example, it'll sort of do something and then swipe at you and grab you and fling you off the stage. And if you get flung off the stage, you die. And he's really rather... difficult, but he seems to be quite sort of level-headed and has a plan all the time. But then there's another version of him that's, I think it's called Crazy Hand, and Crazy Hand is sort of, it's the left hand, whereas the Master Hand is the right hand. Left hand, who seems to be a bit more, I don't know, it's almost got like sort of dystonic movements or something. And wiggles and shakes and twitches and does things much more erratically. And you fight them both at the same time. You have to fight these two things that if you're not paying attention, you'll get punished and flung off the stage. And it's quite anxiety-inducing when you're playing it, especially at harder levels, because you just get punished and punished and punished. And again, there's no real explanation what he is, who it is. It could be you. Could be.
Yeah.
You could be Master Hand, and it could be. It seems to be.
Doing a little bit of digging into it. Do you know what he's called in French?
No.
He is what translates to as Creator Hand.
That was my theory, that he's that Master Hand is the creator of everything, and you just say to go and get fight against effectively God of Smash Brothers universe.
Yes. I don't know how much to take from it, because the Russian it translates to as main hand. So it could be the creator, or it just could be the main hand, you know.
Yeah. But
if it was French for main hand, it would be main, wouldn't it? Man.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, he's a very interesting character. I like, and you say, is he even a character? Or is he representative?
You can't play as him, but he's definitely a big part of it. And he's in every single game, and you've got to defeat him. Mm. And he just obviously keeps coming back. So yeah. I don't know what the backstory is, but he is.
No, there's definitely some thought there, isn't there? Because the last where you actually have to find him, fight him at the end, is known as Final Destination.
Yeah,
it is. He is the epitome, or whatever it is it has that classic video game baddie ultimate boss feel about him, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, he is the big boss at the end of the game. So, you know.
He's bigger than some of the other villains that you can play as, you know, so he's bigger than everyone.
Yeah.
He is the ultimate, the final destination.
And how do you defeat? He's essentially a godlike character.
Yeah, you just have to kick him until he just sort of explodes.
There we are.
There you go.
And he's always coming back in the various iterations of the game, so does he ever really go away?
Yeah.
There we are. Right, so, number two. I know that there'll be people listening to this going, how can you forget this person? How can you forget that? But, you know, it's only a short list, and I don't know if you've noticed, there's a few dozen games out there. So it's difficult to, you know, pare it down. But I think no list is complete with at least one of these group of baddies that kind of came out at roughly the same time. And because I'm a Sega man, for me, that baddie is Dr. Robotnik. Also known as Eggman. In fact, originally known as Eggman.
Yeah.
In the Japanese. It was only the Americans that gave him a kind of pseudo-communist Russian alter ego.
Because I always wondered why he was Eggman.
Yeah, yeah. Dr. Ivo Eggman Robotnik. But his original name was just Eggman. And he's a really good villain. Like, a well-designed villain, kind of comical. He looks a bit eggish. He doesn't really have a neck. Got his crazy moustache. Wears blue glasses with goggles on his head. A red coat, black trousers, white gloves. But his main issue, his main kind of raison d'etre, is to rule the world as a mad scientist and kind of make robots out of everything. And you know he's a bad dude because he uses fluffy little animals like bunny rabbits and little duckies and things and squirrels and things like that to essentially act as batteries. It's basically the origin of the Matrix stories.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Basically is what it is. The Matrix ripped off the Sonic series, ripped off Sega, and Sega aren't doing very well now. So I hope someone from Sega's listening and will go after the Wachowskis and sue them for copyright infringement. But yeah, you know, and Sonic, as great a character he is, he needs to have a villain that is capable of at least slowing him down a little bit. And Dr. Eggman was that, with all of his robots and his super genius.
What I would say about Dr. Robotnik is he'd always make his robots, those big final boss robots, where he was sitting was always the weakest point.
Yeah, you'd think he'd learn.
You think he would, wouldn't you?
But yeah, I mean, he was a flawed genius, let's put it that way. But you got to give him credit for his stick-to-itiveness. Yeah. I think he doesn't give up, despite how many times Sonic makes a fool of him. He just keeps coming back. And, you know, just for the sheer stick-to-itiveness, I think he gets there, he gets up there. And because he's such a old character in the Sonic the Hedgehog series, that I remember him is probably the oldest baddie that I remember still, yeah. Like, and can readily recognize. And I think he's just a classic baddie in the video game genre that lots of people still recognize. And you know, name recognition can get you so far. It doesn't get you to top spot,
no,
but it can get you quite far in life.
So, number one.
We've reached it.
Well, I don't know about you, I was racking my brains. I've still got, there's loads of people I wanted like to do like, special shout outs to, because
yeah,
they were in my head. Like, I mean, I wanted to have Bowser in there at some point, who's
yeah,
another villain, just like Dr. Robotnik, pretty good inventor, still gets invited to the golf games and the tennis tournaments, so he's obviously yeah, not that bad a dude. And also like the origami killer from Heavy Rain, I was wondering about him.
Such a good character. Yeah, and people from the Final Fantasy people will be pulling their hair out over the fact that we've ignored Sephiroth.
Yeah.
And all of these people. But you know, I was never a big Final Fantasy person. Apologies.
Yeah.
But I know for a fact that there are loads of people that still rank Sephiroth as probably the greatest video game villain ever. But you know, it's not to my experience, so what can I say?
And I'm going to be honest, I've never played Half-Life, so lots of people are going to be fuming at me for that, or Portal.
Yeah. And there were the Far Cry games as well, like the one that from the Far Cry series that gets mentioned quite a lot is that Vass, Montenegro.
Yeah.
Vass is a great character as well. But again, you know, it's difficult to pare it all down. There are so many good characters out there, but we had to pare it down. So now we've got to our number ones. Jamie, share with us your number one video game baddie.
So my number one is a game that terrified me when I was a teenager, and I kept coming back to, and I've gone back to again loads of times. I've even got a cross stitching of it on my wall in my man cave. And I don't know if you ever played, there's a particular game from The Legend of Zelda, and it's called Majora's Mask.
No, I haven't played much of the Zelda games apart from the very first one on the Game Boy.
Yeah, so Majora's Mask, there's all sorts of theories about it, but basically Link is running after this character and then falls down and then comes across this guy who sells masks, who's lost a mask, a particular powerful mask called Majora's Mask, and it's been stolen by some hapless thing called a Skull Kid, and it's now wearing it, and it's given it almost omnipotent powers. And just for fun, the Majora's Mask is now going to bring down the moon onto this town and destroy it, and you've got 3 days to fix it. And every time you don't, the world gets destroyed, or you go back 3 days and start again. And the design of it, the actual Majora's Mask, I don't know if you've Googled it, but
yeah,
it's got big demonic eyes, spiky bits, all sorts of colors. And
it's almost in the shape of a heart as well, isn't it?
It is almost, yeah, it is. And in the game, so when you're fighting Majora, it does all sorts of things, and it grows tentacles and it crawls across the floor, and it's nightmarish. The whole thing is nightmarish, and at the same time it's bringing down this moon, and the moon for some reason has a terrifying face. So this moon is getting closer and closer and closer every day, and the whole game is just terrifying. And it basically succeeds. Majora basically destroys the world most of the time, but then you have to go back in time to stop it. And I loved it. I loved the premise of it, of, you know, putting on a mask and being taken over and then destroying the world. And it was a really good game, really complicated game, it's sort of like the death loop of its time.
Yeah.
And it was brilliant, and I love Majora's Mask. And yeah. As I said, I've got it on my wall.
There's really interestingly, before we started doing this, I came across a video. So I never actually played it, but I came across a video about the theory about the game. Yeah. Majora's Mask theory, because for many people who play a lot of the Zelda games, as far as I'm understanding, Majora's Mask is their favorite.
Yeah.
And it's got lots of quite dark themes, whereas in the other games it doesn't so much. And there is this theory that Majora's Mask is actually kind of like the death hallucinations of Link.
Yeah, I've seen that exact, yeah.
You know the one I'm talking about, yeah?
Yeah.
It's a compelling theory. The evidence is that they present is quite compelling. Again, I'm not one to talk about it because I don't know much about the Legend of Zelda series, but it is very good. And when you actually look at the video and it shows you the clips of the game and how dark and interesting it is, then yes, you can start believing that actually this is a kind of like a ritualistic manifestation of Link essentially dying.
Yeah. And I think I wouldn't be shocked, because they talk about things like different stages of grief and things like that, and it does do that. Mm. And he wears different masks, and it's such a good game. And yeah. I discovered something just today, actually, that in the original game, depending on what you called yourself, changed what the stars were in the sky. I don't know why someone wrote that as a code, but it just drew me in and terrified me. And I was like, after day one, I'd start going back in time because I couldn't face going another day knowing that moon was going to come and crush me and destroy me.
That's interesting, because, you know, Majora, I mean, in many ways, if you look at it, look at the way it's done, the pictures of it and the interpretations that so many of the fans have made, it could be thought of that Majora is essentially death.
I mean, you never actually find out who Majora is. You just know that that's Majora's Mask.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Yeah. Great, great baddie. Great choice at number one.
Thank you.
Really, 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 really good.
And who's yours?
My last one. This one for me has to be number one, because it's the ultimate bad guy. I mean, we talked about really quite bad dudes here, you know, serial killers, you know, organized criminals, vampires, you know, alien queens. But for me, the number one bad guy is the devil. And not just the devil, I'm talking about the devil in the Diablo series of games.
Yes.
Because, you know, I mean, what can you say? I mean, I'm pretty sure everyone knows who the devil is, or at least has an understanding of what we mean by the devil. And in the Diablo series of games, you are literally going through a church into the catacombs, and the levels are just going further and further down with the ultimate aim that you are meeting the Lord of all evil at the bottom of it.
Yeah.
And did you ever play Diablo?
I did. I've played, Diablo 2, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a really good game. Top-down view.
Yeah.
Hack and slash looter sort of game.
Yeah, yeah. Good. It is good. It had those RPG elements as well, where, you know, you collect armor and weapons, and you could go and stop and then come back again. It was one of the first games that allowed you to do that kind of thing, where you take the bits and pieces that you've collected from a previous game and come back, and from the beginning. So actually the beginning of the game starts really easy, and you smash through the levels really quickly, and you just get that little bit closer to hell. And I remember the first time I played there and got to hell, and I would have been quite young playing this, and I was genuinely frightened. And you get to hell. At first, you start walking through the catacombs of a church, and then it starts looking more like a dungeon, and then it starts looking more like, you know, subterranean caves, lava caves. And then all of a sudden, you reach this level where the walls and floor are kind of made up of like body parts, and there's these just like monstrous tableaus of tortured human beings as you're just walking around these various levels of hell fighting bigger and bigger uglier monsters, with the aim that eventually you'll get to this thing which is like a 20-30 foot tall typical horned red devil. And you know, it stayed with me. You know, the first time I played that game got to be at least 25 odd years ago, maybe more. And I can still imagine it. And not only that, it's not like I only played it once. I played this game multiple times, and it still has this kind of really, it gets me in the pit of my stomach. I feel uneasy playing it, even though I played it before and I kind of expect what's happening. And I don't think it's a spoiler to kind of say what happens at the end of a game that's at least two decades, if not three decades old. But
yeah,
the whole point of it is at the end, you, when you finally defeat the devil, what happens is the monster kind of melts away and you're left with a human being.
Yeah.
Because again, it's that human being has just done this like dark incantation and invoked the form of the devil and brought it onto the human plane. And I think that's quite, what was quite terrifying and what made it a really good series of games is like, yeah, you've defeated this kind of incarnation of the essence of pure evil, but it's still there.
It's still, and there's also just a man at the end of the day.
Yeah, at the end of it was just a man that was being manipulated by this creature. And actually, the devil is just the essence of pure evil. And so long as there are evil people out there willing to do evil things, you'll never get rid of him. So yeah, that's why for me, Diablo, El Diablo, the devil himself, is my number one video game baddie.
I mean, I some would argue, again, as I said before, the Joker and things, argue possibly the baddie of everyone, if you believe that kind of thing.
Oh, dear. I know for a fact that there'll be people screaming at this podcast going, how could you forget A, B, C, D, or other? Well, if you want to tell us how badly we've represented your views and how wrong we are about various choices as of baddies, please get in touch with the podcast on Twitter at The Echo Chamber or via email echopod@gmail.com and let us know how wrong we are. We are really looking forward to reading all of those.
Yeah. I cannot wait to see what some people say.
Yeah. Brilliant. And if you haven't already, get onto the Twitter at the Echo Chamber again, ECCO Chamber, and look at the World Cup of Video Game Baddies. And there's at least 20 baddies on there that we haven't mentioned as part of the World Cup knockout tournament that we've created. So put your votes in for your best baddies, and we'll see if democracy can come out with a better choice of number one baddie than what Jamie and I have already done.
Than the devil and death.
Yeah. I think our number one choices are pretty good. I'm pretty happy with that. I think that's solid.
I'm pretty pleased with them.
Jamie, thanks again for coming on.
Oh,
and
thanks so
hosting
much. I really enjoyed it this week. It was really, really good.
Good times. All right, mate. Take care.
All right. Cheers.